It is the Starship Rokan Show.
With Anna DeVlantis.
Yes.
On 720 WGN.
I really like the Barack Obama portrait, I gotta say. Michelle Obama one doesn't look like her. I'm gonna agree with a lot of people on that.
I like it though, because it's really modern.
Yeah.
I like the modern. Uh-huh. I like the modern art, and I like the modern. And I think hers is, you know, that two dimensional thing. It's a little bit of an impressionist piece. I like that. I also the artist who did the Barack Obama piece.
You're saying he's a significant artist. Oh, I didn't know much about his background, but
yeah.
He's incredible.
Yeah, in 21st century art, he is one of the he's considered one of the young masters of the 21st century. And they chose him. If you're going to choose a major artist to do your portrait, they chose the right guy to do it. So I think it's really cool. And if you look at for people who are like, I can't believe it. That is not befitting of a president, you know, in a
but
portrait.
It looks like he burst through the Wrigley Field ivy.
Yes. It's not. This is the Smithsonian. This is not the Hall of Presidents at
That's
Disney.
Right.
And it's also not at the White House, the Hall of Presidents. Although, you know, when they commissioned the John F. Kennedy piece, right, you know, that's a very famous where he's standing, not sitting. Which was, and not charging somewhere like on a horse, like Roosevelt, where he's standing, he's looking down in a way. It's a really, you know, that's a monumental piece of art. This, the Obama piece, is a monumental piece of art. Forget about the politics of it. Forget about, you know, how you feel about whether you love him or hate him. It's, if you look at it just as a portrait, as a piece of art, it's a pretty amazing thing. And you look at the artistry of his face.
Oh, his face. You're right.
It's like a photograph, right?
Really. But even more, it's just even more artistic. It brings something new to his face, but it's so clearly an accurate representation of his face and his body. He said he wanted the ears to be a little smaller. He wanted the gray to go away a little bit. But the artist is like, no, we're going to represent you how you are, Mr. President.
Yeah.
There's something else interesting. It says, you know, everyone's kind of talking about the bushes behind him. Is Sean Spicer going to pop out of them? Is it like, you know, well, what's going on there? And the artist says that the flowers in those bushes are drawn to represent the places where the president lived, Chicago, Hawaii, Kenya. So the vision was this, like, charting a path through time, through the earth, of the places he has lived, and it brought out.
See, I told you.
So it's
from Kenya.
There's some significance there that
totally
overlooked. See, Kenya, right?
Kendi Wiley, by the way, has got a. There's a lot of other art in which people are emerging from that. One of his most famous pieces is that. So a 2012 piece that it is, he's in the Brooklyn Museum. He lives in Brooklyn, and that's where most of his work is done. And he's got, which of course makes him, you know, a total snowflake because he lives in Brooklyn, right? Isn't that what they would say?
I guess.
I can't wait. I mean, Fox News is like on fire about this because it's like, hey, can you believe? Like, it's like doughy white guys like myself on Fox News right now, all screaming about how awful this is because this is, you know, can you believe this? It's like, this is the biggest problem ever. The president blamed Barack Obama for the infrastructure issues also in his speech today. Bad for the last 8 years. Everything's the best last 8 years. But you know what? I will give, but let me give Barack Obama a shot here. He used to say that all the time, too. Look, things were bad the last 8 years. Now look what happened. You know, it's always blame your predecessor. I hate that stuff. But I want to go back to, because you got to look at the full throw of history. But if you go back to the actual piece of art itself, you can't take your eyes off it. It's fascinating.
I agree.
As a piece of art.
The more you look at it, the more there is there to discover. It is. It's an incredible piece of art.
So I'm a huge fan of this guy for years and years and years and years. If you go back, just look him up.
Does he do portraits?
Yeah.
Honestly? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know the female artist who did Michelle Obama's portrait is a portrait artist.
Oh yeah, Kendi Wiley is
a
portraitist. His whole thing is he. He started getting fascinated in the early part of the 2000s with the whole with hip hop and with rap, and he was using those artists. There's a great Tupac piece that he's done where he does these guys as the way that the Dutch masters would have done kings of Europe, the same lighting, and he puts them some. And there's one of Snoop Dogg like in full regal gear.
Oh,
and, you know, with a scepter and all of that. And he does.
I think I know that one.
So it's like a whole, it's a style that he's done. He's bringing back all the lighting tricks of the Renaissance artists, you know, the great masters, where it looks like real sunlight and it looks like a photograph, but it's actually a painting. He's using that style, and he did it, and he made these hip hop artists into, you know, kings and queens, like in a royal court. It's very Game of Thrones. And in his art is resonating. I mean, there's a lot about that. There, I mean, his art is evolutionary. And so there is something really, really, really important about this guy and this movement and this time. So it's a really interesting choice. Is not, you know, he's not going over to JCPenney and getting a, you know, a portrait taken. It's kind of a big deal. And it does, when you look at it, it's Barack Obama warts and all. You get the sense, you know, the age, the pain and the joy of the era.
Yes.
Of it.
He doesn't have this big brilliant smile. He's looking more serious and almost meditative in that picture.
Yeah.
Like he's looking off into space, just sort of thinking about things. Very, pensive. Yeah.
Well, again, this is an artist that is in a ton of important museums around the world now and will be forever. Mm-hmm. He's one of those guys whose life work, there will be retrospectives on him and everything. I mean, he's 21st American century art is, you know, he's at the very top of the class of that. So.
Yeah.
He went to Yale. He's not, you know, the president would like him. You know, he's well educated. He had good marks. He had all those kinds of
things.
An
academic.
Yeah. I mean, he's not some guy off the street. Although the president, you know, liked the guys off the street too, because they played well in his casinos.
I like how he commented on his wife's portrait very well, saying it represents her elegance and her beauty, but also her hotness.
Yeah.
So that was
all of that.
Done. And then he kind of giggled it off, like, I don't know if I'm supposed to say that. But come on, she's out.
Here is, what do we got here? We got, we just heard from Violetta, who I'd like to see also in a Kehendi Wiley.
Gosh, what would hers look like?
Yeah, I know exactly.
Very royal.
Like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're thinking scepters and
Yeah, I'm thinking
crowns.
A big throne.
I want to ask you a question here, because last week we were making fun of Violetta for wearing glasses that didn't have prescription in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's wearing sunglasses indoors to do her traffic. I'd like to know what that's all about.
So I have a corneal abrasion.
Oh,
who
gosh.
Doesn't?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
So that's why I have the sunglasses. It's hard to look at the computer screen.
Well, and the snow is very reflective. It's so
right.
Bright.
I don't have any windows in here, but just the light.
Yeah, she's in a dark little room, and she's wearing sunglasses because she's got a corneal abrasion, which was the name of my band in high school.
Which is corneal abrasion.
Kind of really that ironic.
Painful.
I'm totally Roe Strong today.
All right. Well, why don't you get to it after Judy Palak tells us what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Her sunglasses during the day in the dark.
Yep, that's what she's doing.
Such a diva.
Yeah, apparently she has a you have a corneal abrasion.
Yeah.
Ben Bradley, have you heard of ever such a thing?
I have not.
I scratched my cornea. You've
How
never
did
heard
you
of that?
Do that? Was it itchy? Or?
Well, I was.
I can't
out
wait to hear this. I cannot wait.
I was
to hear this.
In the middle of. I was just standing there, but they were passing around a lime, throwing it around, and then the lime hit me right in the face.
So you were. Out, I was, quote unquote, which I assume means at the club or something.
No, I was not at
night.
A club. I was at. I went.
Oh,
on
I don't.
A ski
we
trip.
Never go to a club. You're on a ski trip.
Yeah, I went to a cabin in Galena.
Oh, how nice!
Yeah, it was very nice until this happened.
And they were throwing around limes.
Yeah, I don't really know why they were doing that, but then it
seen
hit
it on
in
her
the
desk.
Face.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish it was like, you know, some intense like ski story, something more interesting, but no, but, just a lime.
So
hit me.
The lime hit your eye.
Yeah, it was a full lime.
Oh.
Yeah. Kind of like the size of an apple. It's pretty
big.
Oh, so
it wasn't even like the lime juice no, got in your eye or the edge. This was an actual lime.
Yeah.
Full lime.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I would not put that on your Bumble profile.
That is my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, I don't buy any of
it,
but that's all right.
That is totally what happened.
Yeah. Not at all.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I had to explain that to three different nurses and a doctor.
What had happened was...
Did you start out with that? What had happened?
Yeah, well, I just like didn't even want to tell people. I'm like, can you just numb it already? Give me something, because I got hit in the face with the lime.
What time did this happen?
It happened on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. What time?
At like, I don't know, midnight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what drinks were being used?
I think I was might have been making a Bacardi Coke.
Gotcha.
Okay. All right.
We see what happened here.
Yep, we do. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, everybody,
we understand.
Yeah, as the police in Chicago like to say, mutual combatants, move along. All right.
We've all been in a scenario very similar to that one, so we should all understand.
Yep. Ben, how is it possible that Midway Airport ran out of de-icer in the middle of a snowstorm?
In February.
Oops. Yeah, I guess they didn't order any more from Alexa. We've been looking into that today, and Southwest Airlines says, rest assured, they now have enough glycol, which is the name of the chemical that they use to de-ice the planes. I don't need to tell you that as a fellow aviation geek, Ro. This is the stuff that they spray on the, it goes on hot, and it's usually got an orangish color to it. It can take about 1,100 gallons or so to de-ice a big jet. And what happened is Southwest tells us that they were unable to obtain enough glycol fluid over the course of several days from their vendor. They have now added another vendor, they say. They only had 10 flights canceled today. But
is this whose responsibility is it to buy the glycol? The airport or the airline?
The airline is responsible.
Okay, so it's Midway's issue.
Yeah, airline. Yeah,
Southwest. So I'm referring to Midway Airlines, of course, for many, many years
yes,
ago.
Yes.
So it's.
You would think they would have some left over in a couple of, 10-gallon drums on the side of the airport marked Midway Airlines.
You would think. So, yeah. And don't they have Amazon Prime? Can't they, like, get it there right away?
Yeah. Well, I was kind of curious about how this whole works. Is this something where they're literally running with just a day or two supply on hand, and therefore if the supply chain, the delivery truck, et cetera, gets messed up, can that delay it? So Southwest wouldn't give us those specifics, but I did check with another airline that operates out of O'Hare, big airline there, and they say they've got storage capacity for about 250,000 gallons of the de-icing fluid, and over 9 days of snow, they went through about 155,000 gallons. So they still had plenty left over. So it's at least the way other airlines work it, the stuff should not run thin. Southwest now having to add vendors, though.
I don't understand.
That doesn't make sense.
And Southwest is a logistics genius company. They're stable genius when it comes to logistics over at Southwest.
Yeah, they're kind of the Walmart of the airlines in terms of pioneering ways to more efficiently move the supply chain, right? Because they were the ones who were first to get down the turn time for jets. Those planes don't make money when they're sitting at the gate. And they, while United and American and the other airlines were, having planes parked at gates for years, it was Southwest that kind of perfected the quick turn, getting the supplies on the plane, getting the garbage off the plane.
And also by the way they load people, the way they do everything at a, they're efficiency masters. So it's kind of a black eye for them. They're kind of a stupid
thing. Did they treat the passengers? Is there any word on that? Because I know when things are quote-unquote weather-related, you're treated differently than if it's mechanical or something like that.
Well, we heard from a lot of passengers over the weekend who were frustrated by Southwest's initial explanations. They initially blamed the weather, which certainly weather is a factor in determining whether or not you have to use the de-icing solution. But no, this was a supply issue. Southwest did say that they changed some of their accommodation policies so that they could help out customers. But, Southwest usually, from a media and public relations perspective, does a pretty good job of getting in front of bad issues, unlike some of the other airlines we cover. Southwest was not great out of the gate on this in acknowledging what was happening. Their first statements to our newsroom and to other newsrooms in Chicago were incredibly generic and blaming non-existent weather at the time.
Ooh, that's unfortunate.
I'll be honest with you. Hate to be this guy. Hate to be the skunk at the dinner party.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Garden
Spray
party.
Spray away.
But I'd rather have an airline that drags a guy off an airplane.
Oh, come on.
Than an airline that runs out of de-icer and then has to cancel an entire airport's worth of flights.
Well, the alternative is an airline that runs out of de-icer and still flies.
No one will do that. That is the one thing for sure, because the captains get to make that decision, and they won't do that.
Yeah.
Because they want to go home at night. And so that's not, I don't think, I just think that's, I don't know. It's just it's a shocker to me. I'd rather go with the dragon, the one guy off the plane who won't move.
What about
they told him he had to go. When a guy from the aviation police, which isn't even really a police department, it's even worse. You stand almost a better chance at the aviation police than you do at the Rosemont police. So I would, I'm telling you right now, get off the plane when they ask you.
Yeah, you usually don't win that argument, do you?
No, you really don't. That's
nobody
true.
Wins the argument
but
when
you usually
tell you
don't
get
dragged off and have your teeth removed.
I would like to propose a third alternative,
down
which
the aisle.
Is don't drag anyone off the plane and de-ice the aircraft.
That's interesting.
Wouldn't
all right.
That be great customer service?
And
free peanuts.
And let me also say this. The carjacking bill, is that going to go through downstate? Did you realize that this carjacking thing, mm-hmm. it's a misdemeanor? If you get pulled over and they can't prove it was you that carjacked the car, and you go, I had no idea
you
the
can
car
say,
was
I
stolen.
I didn't know the car was stolen. My friend loaned it to me.
Right. And that's they just let you go on that?
Yep.
That's
yep.
a problem.
They want to change that.
Yeah, I can see them changing that pretty quickly down in Springfield.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben. Appreciate
also, they will mandate glycol for everybody.
I'm already on it. All right, we'll get to Judy's news coming your way in 2 minutes. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Here is Tom Skilling joining us right now.
Tom. Happy Monday, guys. How are you?
I see that our little tribute to you, our musical tribute to you, made your air on Friday.
It did.
In the middle of a snowstorm, Tom.
I know. Ro, I was really surprised by that, and I kind of was speechless when you played it. It was very good, very clever. And they played it on our 9 o'clock, actually our 10 o'clock show.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them the first I had heard it was when you and I were and Anna were talking on the radio. So that was pretty cool. How often does that happen?
It's your new theme, Tom.
We did you like it, Tom?
I did. I thought it was very good.
Mm-hmm. We're searching for a compliment here, Tom.
The TV was very on obviously. In the other room, and I'm like, wait, where have I heard that song before? And I like ran over. I'm like, hey.
I know.
There it is, Brian Altimer's song for Tom Skilling.
Well, that's, the gentleman who wrote it, the artist, said, look, I don't know the rights to the music, but I wrote the lyrics. And so I thought that was, it was very clever. So
very talented guy, Brian Altimer.
Very talented. Yes, mm-hmm. he is. So thanks for sharing that with me. I didn't know such a thing had been done.
Yes, well, you're welcome, Tom. You're welcome.
So did you guys have a marvelous weekend? Did you do anything exciting besides shoveling snow?
Okay, I got a couple things here. Mm-hmm. One, I just fell in a snowbank right now getting out of my car.
Not good.
Very treacherous coming in from
not
the parking lot.
Not good. Yeah. Well, let me tell you, the treacherousness that will greet us later are these falling ice chunks off these buildings.
Just going to say that. This is a serious issue.
This is.
Because you've got the snowpack up on the roofs of these buildings.
Yep.
I've noticed, you got these gigantic icicles forming in the top of them.
That's it. Mm-hmm. People have sent me pictures of what are literally 5 foot long, icicles.
And what happens is the sun right now is so hot, it's melting, even though the air is cold.
That's right.
It melts it off the side. When the sun's not hitting it, it freezes into this icicle form. And then this week, when it starts to really thaw, those bad boys are coming down.
They're coming down. And another thing to be careful of is the refreezing of the meltwater at night, because this will be one of these insidious situations where we get mild by day, and then after sunset we'll go sub-freezing. So untreated sidewalks and driveways, even treated ones, may, as the meltwater washes away the chemicals, refreeze again. So a little caution advised, although the actual falling snow is turned off. I'm a little worried about what I see in the 2 weeks that follow, because Our models are showing unseasonably warm air to our east in the Appalachians and southeastern Midwest, and unseasonably cold air to the west. And while they don't identify a particular system, this puts us in that zone in between. We call that a baroclinic zone in the weather profession. That's where the jet stream tends to set up.
Oh my God.
In the mean. And so,
I don't even know what he just said.
I don't either.
I've been to
dangerous.
A baroclinic too, and it was very painful.
No. Yeah.
You got to get that checked out.
Yeah, I did. At baroclinic. It was not fun.
It sounds very unpleasant, doesn't it?
It does.
But at any rate, these thermal zones are the zones along which disturbances can run. So we'll see if anything starts showing up. But that's a week away.
To answer your question, though, I had a great weekend. I loved the snow.
Good.
And we were sledding. We were running in it. We were doing all kinds of like snow angels. And
yes.
We put the full snow gear out and just enjoyed it. I mean,
very
it's kind of cool when it falls on a weekend, isn't it?
It is. You don't have to be anywhere, well, at least a lot of folks don't, but people work on the weekend, too.
And Friday, a lot of people got to stay home.
But the conventional rush hours don't occur,
mm-hmm.
So it's a little easier to get around and deal with that when that happens.
Oh, yeah.
I went into the tundra yesterday. I put on my big snow boots.
The tundra?
And I put on my big my big puffy coat.
Yeah.
And I went off into the tundra, and I did my errands on foot. I don't know why I chose to do this, but I thought, it's a Sunday. I got time. I should do it.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I found.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that it was fun when I was outside. It was kind of fun. I generally don't like being outside in the winter, but in this case, it was fun. Then when you go inside, uh-huh. if you're doing any kind of shopping, you have to stand in line.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And you're in, then you start to boil in your own suit.
That's
it's
right.
like It's like those all those like space movies where they're either too hot or too cold.
I know.
That's it.
That's why you need a purse, and you just take your hat off and your gloves and your scarf and you put it in your purse.
Yeah. I did. I put it in my purse, and that didn't work out. I didn't know what to do.
Well, and another thing, too, if you're out shoveling snow, you tend to overheat in these heavy coats we've got. And then you kind of freeze when, heat wears down.
This was a dangerous heart attack snow, too, turns out. I mean,
there
was like four people died in Northwest Indiana.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. Not surprising. Yeah, that's 12-to-1 ratio snow. That's about normal for us. But that's a healthy amount of water content to be hauling, to the side of your sidewalk or driveway as you shovel.
It's heavy.
It is heavy, and we're not used to doing this,
mm-hmm.
so we can easily, overextend ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's a good point.
Yep. Yeah. We nearly lost our little puppy in the snow, though. I told you we got a puppy. And she's only about, 7 inches off the ground in the
gosh.
And the snow by Saturday and even Sunday, especially those drifts, were certainly high enough.
Formidable. Sure. Yeah. You could easily lose a little dog in this.
Yes. She was popping around in it, having so much fun, and then, boop, she went down into one of these little, these little snow drifts, and she came back out with a plastic bottle. And we're like, there she is.
I know.
They find their way, though. They seem to know. That's even puppies seem to have an instinctive understanding that it's that they either know it's water or they don't, and they either like water or they don't.
Right. Uh-huh. There's a very definitive. We have three at home, and one of them just loves it. I mean, she kind of likes it too. But the little one says no. She looks at you like, how can you do this to me?
I'm not going out there.
And you die a thousand deaths looking at that little face looking up at you.
Totally.
You know? But yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, do you find that the little one likes the snow?
Absolutely loves it. She's having a blast. All weekend she was just having fun. She didn't want to go in. She was all over her little nose. She was poking it into the snow. And
it's good.
It was fun.
Yeah,
you need
an outdoorsy dog. Because, I mean, dogs that have my personality, that are like indoorsy and just want to lie around.
No.
They tend not to be as much fun.
They're looking for the canine carnuba wagon.
Yeah.
Where's
that puppy upper? That's what they want to know. Having a dog that likes to, it's good for the whole family because having an outdoor dog, then you get outside more and you get
it's true. Excited.
It makes you go out there, even when the weather isn't perfect.
Right.
You know what I get a kick up to? We have a little kitty, and not so little anymore, but the cat sits at the window and watches with great fascination and claws at the window as the snow is drifting on the porch outside. So he'll sit there for, hours watching the snow coming down. It's really kind of funny to watch. He doesn't go out in it, but
isn't that funny? A meteorologist's cat.
Yeah.
watches the snow coming down.
There's something
meta here.
Yes.
I know. Well, look, it's a meteorologist home, so it's a strange outfit
to begin
with. I can
only imagine what goes on over there with the dogs and the cat staring around at the thing. And then I just imagine there's a mad scientist room where all your computers and everything are.
Oh, yeah, I could imagine
like
that, too.
A weather laboratory in your home.
Where you go in there and you just get smarter because, you know, Tom Skilling had been in that room.
Well, you know something? You haven't lived until you've seen a cat drawing a thermodynamic diagram.
That goes on in my room.
Yeah.
Have you seen that commercial with the cat that sitting on the couch, is lying on the couch, looking bored.
Yes.
It's like been all over the Olympics, this thing. And you're like, whenever I think, and now when you mention that, Tom, I imagine your cat just sitting there on its back, staring at the snow, going, all right, I got to eat.
This kitty.
Who's going to make itself around here?
This kitty is the sweetest. We've concluded, my two roommates and I, that this is the sweetest cat. He is so adorable. We adopted him at 5 weeks old from Paws.
Oh.
And this is, without a doubt, the cutest and the friendliest little cat I've ever seen. I had two cats before. One lived to be 16, one 21, so they had nice lives.
Sure.
But this little one is an animal unto itself. It's really adorable.
Hey, the dogs are okay with the new cat showing
up? Love the kitty. They all get along terrifically. It's the funniest thing. Yeah.
Would not expect that.
No, the cat lays on his back and kind of like smacks the dogs in a playful way, and the dogs nuzzle their nose into its stomach, and then the cat will get up and run away, run to the other side of the room, and then lay down and repeat the whole thing because the dogs follow. And it's the funniest thing to watch. I had no idea cats and dogs could get along that well, but they really do.
Especially initially, I would think that there'd be a little bit of, you know.
Yeah, there was a tentativeness to it.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right.
Well, they respect cats. Dogs respect cats. I mean, dogs are formidable,
yes.
You know. But cats are,
they're kind of in their own world.
They know they're faster than the dog.
Yeah.
The dogs get it learn it pretty early on when they go, hey, come here. And they want to play. And then the cat does that. Whenever the cat makes that noise, that, you know, that
you
sort of like, that where you know the cat's mad.
Yeah.
I mean, or the
hissing
sound. The claws come out. Does you can't have claws or no?
Not on the front. We left the claws on the back, and I know some people say you shouldn't do that. I've done that with all my cats. I've never seen any ill effects at all, and I talked to the vet about that. So these are not outdoor cats, so you wouldn't want to do that for a cat that goes outside.
Yeah, the cat. If a cat has actual claws, because the ones that I was forced to live with did. And
you're such a fan of the cats.
I'm really not, and I'll tell you the dog. And I had a pretty, not a shrinking violet dog.
Right.
Big dog, knew how to handle herself in a tricky situation.
Right.
Sure.
And was that dog got so afraid, big boxer, got very afraid of this cat real fast. Because
isn't
the claws come out and you're like, okay, I got it.
Yeah,
I'm with you. What do you need?
Yeah.
I'll get it for you. You want a chew toy? You want a toy? I got the toy.
Yeah, it's like being accosted with somebody with a gun. The minute the gun comes out, the conversation is over.
What do you
totally.
Just, right? My my dog used to just give its wallet over.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Right.
You know, what do you need?
Anything you want.
Anything you want. Take the car.
You want my dinner? There, go get it.
Yeah, just put the claws away.
Right.
All right. So we're gonna have a big thaw coming up. Now we've wasted all of our time here.
Oh, yeah.
Big thaw
with a cool down Friday and Saturday, and then next week, kind of a typical week. In terms of temperature, we're talking daytime highs, many of them in the 30s, and nighttime lows in the low 20s, teens and low 20s.
Okay, so we're going to have a thaw freeze kind of situation.
Yes.
All right, so just be on the lookout for that, people. On the lookout.
Yes.
Advice.
All right, welcome to the Upper Midwest. All right, thank you very much, Tom. Appreciate it.
Ro and Anna, good to talk to you.
All right, here's
Anna, say hi to your little doggy.
She'll appreciate that.
Thank you.
Right.
I appreciate
her
it.
Pet.
Here's Violetta wearing her sunglasses doing the traffic inside a small windowless room.
I have a corneal abrasion, Ro. This is very painful, but I'm going to fight through it just for you.
Yeah. Pro-Con Show with Anna DeBlasio right here, 720. Hey, have you seen the Olympics? You've been watching this thing?
I've been watching the, like, when something makes news, but I didn't get into it this weekend. I was out enjoying the snow. Are you liking it?
Well, there's a couple problems that I have so far. One, because it's in Asia, the time difference screws up when you see stuff live. So if you're watching, like, the night show, like, at, you know, after 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, you start to see stuff that's live because it's 14 hours ahead.
Right.
So it's like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, noon in the morning, right, over there the next day. It's 13 or 14 hours ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was 14 too, but yeah.
So it's like, so you start to see things, and then, you know, I was watching the figure skating last night, and it was on, you know, it's like 10 o'clock in the morning there. It kind of hassles my buzz when I stop and I think about the fact that it's like, you know, they're waking up having coffee and going out and doing that. I sort of imagine them being nervous all day and doing it.
It's a nighttime thing, like a performance at night.
And then people falling down the mountain on the big snowboard, which the snowboarding has now surpassed skiing for me.
It's fascinating to watch, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's just amazing.
Even that when they're in, you know, they're jumping off things and they're getting all that air and they're flipping around and they land. And it's, I don't, somehow it seems safer to me than actual skiing because your legs can't go two ways. Your legs have to go together wherever they're going.
Thankfully.
Because, like, in the skiing, the worst is when you see somebody wipe out, and then one leg's going one way, the other leg's going the other, and you figure they're going to get, like, torn in half like a piece of paper.
Ooh.
I don't like that.
Yeah, it always seems like they're getting tangled every time they fall. It's like, I don't know what's going on.
And then you wait. Then you wait for them to get up. You're like, are they going to get up? Are they
And everything's going in a different direction, and you're like, the leg doesn't go that way. And it's like, it's like when you're, you know, you're twisting like a leg off a chicken, you know. It's like I don't like that. But the snowboard, and also they're like hippies on the snowboard, so everybody's like, yeah, like that. Did you see this? The there's got a, what is he, just turned 18, right? The guy who just won, is he 17 or 18? The guy who just won the gold medal in the
17
red, right, is his name.
Yeah.
And he's like totally a kid.
Yeah, Red Gerard.
Red Gerard, who got the, and I don't even know the names of these events. He was snowboarding down a mountain.
Okay.
And then you have to get up on a rail like it's a railing like skateboarders do. That it's so annoying downtown when they go down the rail of like steps going down. And then you have to get up on the rails. Then you have to keep going down. And then there's a ramp. And there's three different ramps.
Mm-hmm.
They call them the three amigos. We go to three different ramps, and you get as much air as you possibly can. Then you hope you don't die.
And when the wind is howling.
And right.
And it's unbelievable.
It's a slope style course,
the
right?
Slope style. Yeah. Thank you. Like the ladies had a lot of trouble yesterday because there was much more wind than the day before. It was the guys. And they had the guy. Okay. So they showed this one guy from Canada who was apparently, you know, skateboarding on a mountain somewhere, and he got caught in the backlands somewhere, and with his brother, and they couldn't get the helicopter to him, and they had to get like the Rangers to come in and get him, and he almost died. He was in an induced coma like 7 months ago, and they're showing him in his bed, like all broken, and he's out there doing it again, and you're like, who the what?
Why wouldn't you stop there?
Where, you know, this is the thing where you always wonder, like in Chicago, when something bad happens, where are the parents in a situation like this?
These snowboarders, though, they are fearless. I mean, you see them even ask questions like, do you ever think about, you know, how you might not hit that when you do that and you might end up on your head? They're like, no.
There's a lot of lakti in these people, though. There's a lot of,
they love the rush of it all.
Well, so the kid, this Red Granger, what's his name?
Yeah.
Red Gerard.
Red Gerard.
Let's just make it up.
17-year-old.
He just 17-year-old won a gold medal.
Red Gerard. The parents were like, you know, this kid, like, from the time he was, like, five, wanted to be, you know, like, on a skateboard or a snowboard. You know, he just wanted to be moving on a board.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you have to do your homework. And he's like, no! Dad, yeah!
Dude, kill my buzz, Pops.
Yeah! I'm good at being in the Olympics.
Time to shred.
And he did. And he was,
well,
and it was,
he certainly did.
It was a very impressive thing. And I don't know who any of these people are. And this is, like, I cared about it. Like I said last week.
I know.
I have no idea who
you
these
get
people
drawn
are.
In.
And then all of a sudden, all I care about is whether or not they're going to be okay.
Yeah, he's from Breckenridge, Colorado. Started snowboarding at 2 and has just been doing it ever since. It's amazing.
The thing is, he looks like he's 14.
I know.
Yes, he's 5'5".
17. Yeah, he's
115 pounds.
He's like, just...
Right. Gold medalist, though.
Having the time of his life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, God bless. He did... This is great. For the rest of his life, he will be referred to as Olympic gold medalist. Red Granger.
He's going
to
compete again in the big air competition.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Which is, that's what, it's that's like basically from the X Games is who started
right.
it. And they're kind of trying to get a little bit more hip and connect
the
with the younger at the Olympics. Yeah. So they're bringing this in, which is an awesome event. I think everyone's going to like
it. And the tube thing. I'm watching the tube thing with the Chloe Kim and the...
Is that the half pipe
people.
Or the...
That's the, tube. Yeah, the half pipe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That thing. And it's, it's fun. It's fun to watch that. It's more fun than the skiing. Now, the skiing, they've had to cancel a bunch of days of skiing because there's a 30 degree below wind chill at the very top.
Oh,
and
gosh.
The winds are like 40 miles an hour. And so they're having a little bit
Did you hear they were using that? I don't know how to, it's KT tape or something that's very popular. I guess Tom Brady used it on his finger when he had the problems with, or the thumb when he had problems there. And that the skiers are putting it on their face. Mm-hmm. To protect it from those sub-zero weather because it's that bad when it's whipping against their skin. And you got to be able to see, so there's some skin that's exposed.
Kinesiology tape, right?
That's it.
That's what they're calling it, yeah.
Kinesiology
Well, did you
tape.
See even the wearable technology, the coats that they were wearing for the opening ceremony that Ralph mm-hmm. Lauren designed has... It's not they're heated coats, but it's a whole brand new technology. It's not like a heated blanket that has wires running through it. Mm-hmm. The ink inside the coat actually heats up with a very tiny battery that's tucked into the lining of the coat, which you can charge. They hit the button, and within 30 seconds, their coat is completely warm.
It's amazing the technology with the boarders are wearing, the snowboarders are wearing. It is amazing technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's crazy. And then I watched the figure skating.
Oh, what did you think? Were you crying?
I could cry. Hold on a second. Let's
Wasn't
take
there
a
like
phone
a
call
triple
first.
Axel or something?
Rob, you're on WGN.
Hey, I just want to say the Olympic snowboarders are fun to watch, but I like to ski. And on an average day, snowboarders fall down and bring the lift to a stop. And then they sit in the middle of the hill and they text their friends. That's what
I've been told that.
Is.
I know snowboarding. Snowboarders.
Skier, when I watch it, that's what they do.
And skiers are mortal enemies.
Yeah, they kind of are.
Right, they
that's
hit.
True.
They fall down.
Or, snowboarders sit on the hill.
Grab the pipe, bro.
Well, they can because they turn the board sideways and then it's like a bench.
Right.
I mean, this is what they were doing.
Bananas.
Yeah.
Dude, did you drop the lighter in the snow again?
That's right.
Exactly.
Probably.
Exactly.
I don't know. It seems. Anyway, it's beautiful to watch, though.
It is. It's fun.
It's beautiful to watch the Olympians do mm-hmm. it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, listen, pal, I'm not going to be on a snow hill anyway.
Go to Cascade sometime and try to watch snowboarders there.
That's all right. I'm much more interested in a beach. So that's, I'll let you know.
I see that about you, Rob.
Thank you very much, Rob. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
So I'm watching the ice skating last night, mm-hmm. and you've got the girl from Chicago. This is what an idiot I am. I'm watching it from Carpentersville,
mm-hmm.
who like killed it in her individual short program dealy during the team event, and I just couldn't believe it. And then the Canadian dancers, everything's so pretty.
We're here to win. Pull it together.
It was like I'm like watching the team competition last night,
mm-hmm.
and nobody understands what the hell's going on.
No,
nobody understands the
it looks
rules
cool.
of the team competition.
No, but now they make it easier because for everything they had to do, there's a green, there's a light signal. So there's a bunch of dots up underneath the Olympic rings in the corner of the screen,
mm-hmm.
and while they're skating, if they miss something. It's red. If they get it right, it's green.
That,
so you
I
get
love
to
that.
See.
What
you get to follow
idea.
Along and see.
And their score is changing every few seconds.
Yeah, you see it. You see the score changing, the technical score, and then there's the artistic. Now, this Canadian, I got to tell you, this Canadian team of the Moyer and the guy.
Yeah,
and the
they're
deal,
into it, man, aren't they?
And I don't understand ice dancing. I mean, it's like,
the Canadians are always good in ice dancing, aren't they?
Well, these guys are like the biggest. That's like they're like the biggest deal in ice. Dancing mm-hmm. since Torval
and
Dean.
Torval
yeah.
and Dean, yeah.
But they're it's a kind of a beautiful thing, and they're telling a story. I had no idea they were telling a story.
Did you understand the story? What did they tell you?
I don't know.
Do you remember their music?
All I know is that one of them was the one of the stories was the girl was blind. Was that the Italians that were doing that one, where the girl's blind, and I'm like, oh, she's blind. I get it. She can't see because she's doing like the fake blindness thing.
Didn't the Canadians sing? Wasn't there a song Chicago? The music from the movie.
How could you miss that?
Some of the music was like there was a Russian skater like skating to an Elvis.
Yeah, he was awesome.
It's like, what?
But Ro, so you saw, and I was like with you. I'm watching the local people just do mm-hmm. fabulous, and then that Russian 15-year-old girl gets up there.
Oh, by the
way, are you kidding me?
They've got one Russian who looks like Mila Kunis. And she's really great. She's she's supposed to be the best skater in the world.
She's so unbelievable.
And now they have like this 15-year-old who's like the young diva who reminds me a lot mm-hmm. of Violetta, who's out there, who's going to like cut the tendon out of the girl who's like the one who's like 18, who's like an old lady and skating now.
It's a competitive sport.
Yeah, it is. And so you've got this whole, and that is going to be the thing to watch. When the actual competition is on, because they're all acting like teammates and buddy during the team competition, mm-hmm. but now it's going to the individual competition.
Watch out!
And someone's going to get their kneecap broken in this. I can tell between
those
two.
Keep your head on a swivel.
Yeah,
I saw Itanya. I know how that works.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. exactly right. Yep. Now the girl from here.
Speaking of Itanya, that girl from here. Not the one from here, but maybe she's from here. She did the triple. She was the first one to
triple
land,
axle?
First woman to land the triple and a half axle. Yeah.
Mirai Nagasu.
Yes.
Yeah, she's not from here.
She's not from here. But seeing that highlight of that, because mm-hmm. I really can't get into the figure skating, but I've watched that highlight. I have no idea how figure skaters can do that.
It's almost impossible.
The rotation and then landing on one foot on the ice. Wearing skates, it's incredible.
Wasn't she the one they thought had a USA tattoo, and then they had to clear that up because
yes,
she had that,
it was a bandage or
yeah,
whatever
that tape
they
that I was talking about. She was wearing some of that, and it showed it like you know you could see it through.
It was on her inner thigh through her tights. You
right
could see
through
it.
Her tights. You could
so she can't have a tattoo.
No, but people not just a USA wondered tattoo. If that was something
not?
She had.
Not after Itanya.
She's American.
Oh right, she's American. So, I don't know, but it's a strange tattoo. It's the tape. You could tell it's tape. I don't know why there was such a comment.
People went nuts on the internets on that one.
Fake news.
Well, the young lady from Chicago was like, again, what is she, like 16 or something? This is her first year out. She was like, you know, she went like immediately to the Olympic team.
Well, there's Brady Tennell.
That's her.
She's the one
yeah.
from Carpenter's.
Tennell.
Yeah.
Brady Tennell, yeah. Tennell. She is the, you know, she reminds me of Taylor Swift. So I can just connect all of these different things. She's like the young Taylor Swift, right? Taylor mm-hmm. Swift came out as like a 16-year-old, and they're like, oh my God, what a talent. This girl, and she's got a great personality, and she's, you know, she's Chicago's very own. So that's the one to watch, right?
And to cheer for.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So we'll see.
I'm going to get into this now.
But she's up against these Russians who you know want to kill each other and then kill her. And I believe they also have all of her stolen emails. So we have that problem.
She's been compromised.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But this Team Canada seems like they got it all figured out.
Yeah, well, they do.
They're quiet and efficient and good.
Yeah, they're, oh my gosh.
So I don't know what
to
do with
this. They're fun to watch.
And wait,
very emotional.
I just can't wait till the Fox News executive who wrote that article last week about the Olympics being too dark and too gay, meaning dark like the people, like the skins of the people, mm-hmm. and too gay and too different.
Too different.
It's all, you know, this isn't like, you know, back, what the hell's wrong with the Winter Olympics? It's for white people with bad teeth. Right? And all I could do is think about that executive watching last night.
Wasn't happy.
As Johnny Weir, who is... Johnny Weir has a
man bun on steroids.
It's like a pompadour. What do you call it? Like the women wear like
yeah.
You know, like
they poof up their hair kind of
yes.
in the front. And
he looked like Edith Piaf last night. Is what he looked like.
Well, he and Tara Lipinski both brought like 12 suitcases full of outfits. So they're changing outfits every hour. Just about it feels like.
They have bedazzled headphones and microphones.
No question. It just it's
they've got. Have
a
you
lot
seen them?
Yes.
They've got like the rhinestone, or maybe it's diamonds. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wearing the whole bling. And I'm just thinking that's got to be driving them nuts. And then you got the American figure skater, the male figure skater, who just made the Olympics this year,
mm-hmm.
who is
Adam Rippon.
Yes, who's very very
vocal,
open and vocal. He's mad at the vice president. I'm just thinking, oh boy.
But he killed it on the ice.
He did. It was great.
He was really good.
Yeah. The athleticism of these guys.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
These men and women.
And he's really,
scary.
You know what the weird thing about him? He is so muscular for a skater.
Well, I think that's the whole thing. These guys have to be, it's a different thing. They used to just have to be lean. Now it's about the power, because they have to be able to get those, they have to be able to move, to get the speed up, to be able to get high enough in the air. It's really impressive stuff. I don't care who they're in love with. I don't care what the color of their skin is. I don't care if they're different. If they're good, these people are good at what they do. Isn't that what we're supposed to be about in America?
Damn right.
Mm-hmm.
Even the kid who, you know, came down the mountain on the snowboard.
Dude,
I don't need class.
He's good.
Where's my pipe, bro?
Hey, my pipe. Where's my pipe? All right. Right now, why don't you tell us, Judy, what's coming up in the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom? I don't have to be good with the names of the Olympians, because you can forget them, because you'll forget them as soon as you're done with them. But you are interested for a very short period of time in all of their outcomes.
Yeah. You didn't forget Ryan Lochte. He's still around.
Yeah. Although there's in the Winter Olympics, it is amazing how many stoners there are in the Winter Olympic Games. It's a total Colorado kind of thing, man.
There is a lifestyle around, certainly, like snowboarding.
Yeah. Yeah.
When your friends from like college and high school are like, yeah, I'm going to move out to Colorado or Denver. You're like, okay. I know exactly why.
We know exactly
you're going
what's going on
there.
Have fun.
Yeah. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I covered the X Games a couple of times, and you can see there's certainly a culture.
You have
that whole side of things.
You have to be stoned to want to do some of the snowboarding stuff, because it's sort of like, I want to fly. Without thinking about the fact that at some point you're like 100 feet above the ground, heading down, head first,
yes,
down toward the ground.
And you could die in so many different ways.
Yeah. And you're like, I got this. Because it is amazing that, again, that's, I don't know about, is that it's a different type of athleticism. It's athleticism meets daredevil meets inner ear capability. You got an inner ear like nobody's business to be able to know. How do you know that where the earth is at that point?
I don't know.
I just have no idea. It's like, I'm up here, I'm flipping around. And everything's white, uh-huh, right? And, you know, that's exactly the way that Vice President Pence wants it. And everything is white around you, and you're like, which is it, the sky, the ground?
Well, and what you're landing on doesn't have a lot of give.
No.
So, you know, if you don't land the right way,
yeah,
you just can't think about it. That's the issue. You can't think about it.
Don't worry. My sense is there's not a lot of thinking that goes on here.
Dude, great idea. Let's launch ourselves like 50 feet into the air and flip around and see what happens.
Yeah.
Totally in.
Dude, I think this could be great. All right. Well, let us check in with Judy Pylak with the WGN News. Coming your way in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, this is a very interesting story. If you read today, Held Arctic story in the Tribune about County Commissioner John Fritchie, who's been on this show a number of times, and in full disclosure, is somebody that I've known almost my entire life.
Went to high school together?
Friends. Yes, well, grade school, high school, we couldn't, hard to avoid. Now, the story about the commissioner is that he has a medical marijuana card. Isn't that correct, John? You have a medical marijuana card?
First of all, hi, Ro. Hi, Anna.
Hi, John.
Good to be back. And that is the gist of it. And, you know, in full candor, it's a story that I approached Hal Dardick with, because I wanted to be able to tell the story. You've seen a transition of where elected officials didn't want to admit ever having smoked pot, mm-hmm, to saying, yeah, I did, but I didn't really like it. And obviously, you know, there's a clear difference between medical cannabis and legalizing, which I've been in support of for a long time. But, you know, I was, in 2004, one of the original sponsors when I was in the legislature of the Medical Cannabis Act. And so, yeah, there's a certain amount of irony that I've got a card now. But the main reason I wanted to do this, and a number of people advised me not to because of political fallout, was, you know, I want people to not feel stigmatized about needing a card, about having a card. You know, cannabis has been used for literally thousands of years for medical purposes. You know, it's now recognized in the majority of states as having proven medical uses. And people should be no more self-conscious about having a medical cannabis card than they should about taking high blood pressure medication, things along those lines. Now, obviously, there's different issues about, you know, public safety officials, school bus drivers, that type of thing. But you have a lot of average people who still feel either embarrassed or self-conscious about even talking to their doctor about wanting to get one. So I, you know, wanted to be able to take advantage of my status as, I guess, a public figure, for lack of a better word, to say, look, I've got one. I wish I didn't need one. I do. And, you know, I use it, and it works.
Let me ask you this, because this is a little unclear. So I'll ask the question directly. What do you use it for? What is your medical marijuana need?
With all due respect, you know, I'd hope people would respect medical privacy. Let's say that there are 40 qualifying conditions right now. Mm-hmm. You know, after lengthy discussions with my doctor and another doctor, it was determined that this may be something that works, and it's something that works. It's not.
I know you. It was in the paper, and I mean, we've talked about this, and it mm-hmm. was in the public sphere. You've had two or three medical kind of major medical issues over the last year, year and a half.
You know, I had significant surgery last fall for a potential cancer issue with, you know, God bless, wasn't cancer, and then I underwent a full hip replacement. Now, neither of those were pleasant, but those are the types of things that qualify for needing a medical cannabis card.
We'll talk about that, John, because I think that's a really important issue here. You're not revealing, for privacy reasons, and we'll respect that, what the condition is you're using the medical marijuana for. But Illinois is one of the more restrictive states when it comes to the qualifying conditions, and I know you're working to try to change that.
Well, you know, Illinois is probably the most restrictive state, and the state has consistently been trying to make it harder. So chronic pain, which is something that is recognized in a number of states, was recommended to be recognized here by the Medical Cannabis Advisory Board.
But that's not on the list, governor, is it?
No, and so the governor ignored the recommendation of the board, and so the state is actually appealing it. But so there are a number of conditions that are allowable in other states and aren't allowable in Illinois. But like I said, you know, I was there at the forefront of this in Illinois, and because of the conservative nature of a lot of the state, especially at that time, unless something very conservative got passed, nothing was going to get passed. So, you know, it was a good start. There's a lot of room for improvement. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people that could legitimately benefit from it. Who don't have access to it right now. And, you know, you don't want to force these people to have to get access, you know, through the black market. So, you know, why not give them the dignity of saying, here's a medicine that works. Nothing else works. Whether it's for, you know, muscular skeletal relief, whether it's for pain and inflammation, whether it's for hunger for certain patients that, you know, need to eat and can't.
Well, I mean, there have been
a host of issues.
Waivers on marijuana or on THC, essentially, because there was a fabricated version of it for years that was given to chemotherapy patients and things like that to help them eat and fight nausea and, mm-hmm. you know, other kinds of things. And now, you know, that was never as effective as stuff that was actually grown from the plant. They were never able to replicate the structure of that chemical the same way. So now this stuff is out everywhere. You see these medical marijuana places popping
dispensaries.
Up. Dispensaries, thank you. I can't remember the name. Popping up all over the place. But the thing is, I guess what's interesting to me is that this has become a political issue, and not along the lines of decriminalization anymore, even legalization. It's now become about the identity of the user. And it's another identity politics moment. And a way to separate out in this increasingly sorted, and I mean that in sorted, S-O-R-T-E-D, not mm-hmm. sorted, but the way that we're sorting ourselves in terms of our political identity, this is another one of them. And whether you're, you know, you want total legalization of marijuana for recreational use, or you want it for medical purposes, or you want it to made illegal on all levels, this has become a new wedge issue. And it's fascinating to see that you are, you know, that you know, you're the guy coming out and going, hey, this is what this is about. I use medical marijuana. I have a card. It's legal. and I want to identify myself as that. We were just talking about this. Dan Biss has a cannabis, like a poster that you know, like a yard sign that you put up.
Yeah, yeah, it's right? Just what you'd expect.
It is. It's very, very Bernie. What's going on here?
Well, we have someone
to show you. Oh, I'm sorry,
John. Anna. You should listen to this because I think it's interesting and part of this debate we're talking about here. 224, a texter writes, "I'm a teacher. I can get all the narcotic drugs I need, but I can't get a marijuana card for my particular issue. Go figure." And I think that's the other thing that I think people are sort of scratching their heads. For chronic pain, you can get opioids, right? But you can't get a medical marijuana card.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because what people are realizing now is that medical marijuana and the pain relief properties it has could be one of our most effective tools in the opioid crisis. You know, doctors have no problem writing people hundreds, if not thousands, of opioids. And, you know, winding up with these folks addicted to it. And a lot of these folks say, I don't want to be on them, but I can't get access to medical cannabis. So, you know, there are a host of reasons. But I want to get away from the thought that, you know, this is a way for, quote unquote, potheads to get access to marijuana. I will tell you that, you know, when I'm in the dispensary, you will see these people, and these people want to alleviate suffering of one form or another. And these are, you know, people's grandmothers, you know, people in wheelchairs, people with a lot of different conditions. And so I need people to understand, you know, what this is really about. Let's get away from the reefer madness mentality, and hopefully we'll start to do that. You know, with respect to the legalization, you know, I passed a referendum that's going to be on the March ballot in Cook County, seeing if people want to support full legalization for adults 21 and over. And if you support it, great, vote yes. If you don't, vote no. But I want to give 40% of Illinois residents, which is what we have in the county, the ability to weigh in on that. But I think part of the way that we get there is to get away from the demonization of the whole concept of marijuana.
It's interesting. It is. We're finally having this conversation. It's in this decade, the 20-teens, marijuana and gay marriage were going to be the two big changes, I always thought. That, you know, that by the time we got to 2020, the gay marriage was going to be legal in all 50 states, and now it is by act of the Supreme Court, essentially. And medical marijuana, or marijuana in general. Like, I think we're going to head to recreational across all 50 states before 2022, because there's a huge economic incentive too, especially in states like this. I got to just say that the thing that, and I don't, you know, I don't like the pot. I mean, John even knows this from our childhood. I don't like the pot. I never did. But the reality is that it's, a lot of people do. They like it. If you like, you know, anybody who drinks has no right to tell somebody that they can't smoke pot, because it's quite honestly better for you than alcohol. And I say that as a very large fan of alcohol. I mean, but I can tell you that you know, if you were, you know, it's like you don't want the kids to play football. If you could teach the kids one way or the other, you know, like, you know, you should take up soccer as opposed to football, because you won't get a head injury.
You put them in pot.
You put them on the pot before you put them on the alcohol. I mean, it's like, this horse is out of the barn. I mean, and for the state of Illinois to be as broke as it is, and now the new infrastructure program that is coming out of Washington, where the state of Illinois has to pay for its own infrastructure, not federal money. Look out. We need the money.
And listen, there's a lot of money involved, but let's be honest too here. While Rauner is governor, it will not happen. He's made that clear. But I think with it, and I'm not saying this is a political pitch, but the Democratic candidates have made clear that, yes, they're going to support this idea. And, you know, the money will be there down the road, but the savings that we would have immediately are this: the unclogging of our court system. You know, Chicago police arrest thousands of people every year on low-level marijuana.
I know, but there's another issue there, though. Police, I always bristle at that argument.
They need to sweep folks up.
Yeah, but they do it. I mean, there's still a huge gang economy in marijuana. And maybe you take that out, or maybe you don't. That's the other. That's a scary potential. I don't like that.
But you need to keep something in mind, though. Chicago police arrest somebody. All the other costs come to my level of government, Cook County. It's right. Cook County Jail, Cook County right. Sheriff, Cook County yeah. Courts, on and on. So 90% of those cases get thrown out already. If we can keep those cases from being brought through legalization, you will immediately see millions and millions of dollars in savings by unclogging the court system. We're going to have much more effective criminal justice reform since the overwhelming number of these arrests are of young minority men. And so, you know, the windfall that people talk about in revenue down the road, that would be there, but it's, you know, legitimately 2 to 3 years down the road. But there are immediate effects and immediate savings. And, you know, you've got to start someplace.
All right. John, thank you very much. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, John. Appreciate right. it.
Thank you both. I appreciate it.
Cook County Commissioner John Fritchie. All right. Let us now check in with Judy. It's coming up in the top of the hour news. The Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN.
Just after 5 o'clock, Ro. Look at that. How about that?
Yes. And you know, Anna, what that means.
I do.
Because
I look forward to this time. Every
if it's
day.
5 o'clock.
It's the top 5 on The Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Shall we shall?
Number 5.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh,
speaking
yeah.
out.
RBG.
The notorious RBG.
Mm-hmm. She was pretty notorious in this interview.
She sat down with CNN, and she says that, yes, indeed, she believes that sexism played a role in Hillary Clinton's loss in last year's election.
I think it was difficult for Hillary Clinton to get by even the macho atmosphere prevailing during that campaign. And she was criticized in a way I think no man would have been criticized. Well, I think... And anyone who watched that campaign unfold would answer the same way I did. Yes, sexism was played a prominent part.
I meant the 2016 campaign. It's 2018 now.
Mm-hmm. What did you say?
I said last year's.
Oh.
So I suppose that if you're going to run for president, though, you're going to get criticized. I mean, I don't think anybody is more roundly criticized than Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, sure.
And it was unfair criticism of Barack Obama about his ethnicity and his, you know, all that sort of stuff, and criticized and legitimate criticism of his policies over the years, and yet he became president. And I don't know. I don't think it was really so much that. I think it did come down to the fact that the FBI looked like they were investigating her the week to go in the election.
I'm sure that had an impact.
Yeah, I think that might have been the difference.
Yeah. It was very you know, the hashtag Me Too was trending during the interview as it was released, and she covered a lot of ground because she is a Supreme Court justice and a woman who achieved great things. She said the difference between a bookkeeper in the garment district and a Supreme Court justice is one generation, basically talking about her mom.
All right. Well, here she is talking about Me Too.
I don't think that there will be a serious backlash. It's too widespread. My concern is that it shouldn't stop with prominent people like you, people in the media, that it should protect this new attitude, should protect the maid who works at a hotel.
Yes.
And I think it is spreading so far.
And it is, and she's right about that, that it seems like it's hit a lot of prominent industries so far and outed some very powerful people for bad behavior, but people are sort of waiting to see if it does go down to other industries as well.
It's amazing to me that for the first time women are really listened to, because sexual harassment had often been dismissed as, well, she made it up or she's too thin-skinned. So I think it's a very healthy development.
It's interesting because you're seeing varying degrees of it. And then the highlighted stories are the ones that are particularly bad, right? Mm-hmm. The Harvey Weinsteins of the world.
Sure.
This Rob Porter situation, that's coming up a little bit later on, too, in the top five here.
Mm-hmm.
actually coming up next. But that, you know, that's a circumstance where people weren't really believing the women around him and the motivations of the women around him for saying what they were saying until the picture came out.
Right.
I mean, for a year, people didn't believe it, and then the picture surfaces.
Yeah. Justice Ginsburg also talked about her personal experiences in this interview. I saw it, and she talked about how, I think it was chemistry, and she wasn't very good at lab work, and the teacher, someone senior to her, said, you know, hey, I can help you out with that after hours, and you can imagine she ran into some issues there with, you know, her kind of thing, with sexual harassment, basically. And so she detailed how she had dealt with it quite a bit in her life, and she was trying to provide strength about women being independent and strong, and that there's a shift in American culture. So, but then she also revealed that she really doesn't like all of her colleagues on the Supreme Court bench. Dishing a little dirt there.
Doesn't like all the other. Yeah.
She respects them, but generally likes most of them, was the quote. Who don't you like?
Yeah.
She didn't ask.
Yeah.
She didn't ask.
I wonder what she thinks about the new guy, Gorsuch. Mm. Does she not pronounce his last name? Because nobody seems to understand. Gorsuch? Gorsuch? Such Gore? I don't know.
It's Gorsuch. Weird. I've heard that one.
This is going to be an interesting, it's going to be an interesting session, that'd be my guess. And she's just holding on, right? They're all holding on. All the liberals on the court and the centrist on the court, they're holding out, just trying to live long enough to get past the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least be able to keep their marbles enough intact. I mean, the Republicans have done the same. Their conservatives have done the same thing on the court before. But this is where this sits right now. I think Russia's winning. They're going to win in figure skating, and they're going to win in this thing too. All right, checking in at
number four.
Sarah. We'll let you know when she starts. Sarah Sanders returned to her White House podium. I wonder. You know, I think she was off for a couple of days, right?
I can't imagine Raj Shah filling in.
Who completely screwed the pooch on Thursday and Friday. And, you know, you wonder, like, if she's sitting there, she's getting all the phone calls. She can't even rest on her own vacation. Do you see what Raj, you got to get back here. Raj is screwing up this whole thing.
Didn't he say Omarosa's been fired 3 times on The Apprentice, so she was fired a 4th time from the White House?
Yeah.
As if the White House is an extension of The Apprentice reality show somehow.
So she gets up to the podium, and she's like, all right, I'm back. All right, I'm back.
Does the president still wish Rob Porter well? Does he still believe that he wants him to have a great career ahead of him? Because that would seem...
I think the president of the United States hopes that all Americans can be successful in whatever they do. And if they've had any issues in the past, I'm not confirming or denying one way or the other, but if they do, the president wants success for all Americans, and that he was elected to serve all Americans, and he hopes for the best for all American citizens across the country.
Does anybody believe that? Seriously. Seriously. Does anybody believe that? I didn't think so.
Why did the president tweet that over the weekend? Why is he seemingly defending Mr. Porter publicly? Is it because he has faced his own allegations? Is there some sensitivity there? Is that why that is?
Look, as I just said, and I'll repeat it again, the president and the entire administration take domestic violence very seriously and believe all allegations need to be investigated thoroughly. He certainly supports the victims of domestic violence above all else and believes that everyone should be treated fairly and with due process.
And she kept repeating that part about he supports domestic violence victims, because that was the part a lot of people, the critics of the president, had said, look, you can't just say Rob Porter's a great guy. What about, you know, this real credible evidence about things he had done?
The vice president said he was appalled by the allegations. Why did the president not use this as an opportunity to say something like that? Why does he have to speak through you?
The president has been clear multiple times.
No, he hasn't.
Through myself and others within the administration that we condemn domestic violence in all forms.
He has not said it. Why has he not said
it? I'm the spokesperson for the White House and for the president, and I'm saying it to you right now.
Why does the president have to say it? Why didn't he say it?
I'm not sure how I can be any more clear. I think the president has espoused his views on this, and I certainly have echoed and told them for everyone.
God.
That was my favorite line.
Do I have to stay here?
That she couldn't be any more clear. What?
She couldn't be any more clear that she's the mouthpiece for this because the president refused to say it, so they sent her out to say it.
Then every time I heard he speaks through me, I would think, you know, it's like a witchcraft thing. He speaks through me.
He sat down with me and specifically dictated those words that were on that press release.
She made that up right on the fly.
Reading.
Well, I know it's too bad that the president doesn't know how to actually reach out to the American public around his own press and around the so-called fake news press. It's too bad he doesn't have a Twitter account or something where he could actually go out and say something like that.
But that's the problem. He said the exact... He didn't say it. He had the opportunity.
Because in his Twitter account, he believes he's only talking to his base. And he is, in a sense. I mean, what he's doing is paying off to his base every time he does it, as opposed to everybody else who goes, oh, my God! And, you know, you set your hair on fire. You go into the bathroom, you find a flammable substance, you spray it in your hair, and then you set your hair on fire if you are anybody but his base when you see his tweets, right? Even some people in his own base are like, oh, please, Donald, stop doing that, right? But this is the way it is. And let's just talk a little bit about the genesis of this.
Mm-hmm.
It is now coming to light that Mr. Porter was dating another woman in the White House. Not Hope Hicks, but another woman in the White House.
Right.
That apparently wasn't going so well. He starts dating Hope Hicks, and then that woman, girlfriend number one in the White House.
Mm-hmm. Called McGahn, the White House counsel, to let him know what's what about Rob Porter.
Yeah, that Rob Porter, that these other women have accused Rob Porter, his two ex-wives, have accused him of domestic violence, and he's turning on her now. This woman in the White House is not yet identified. Now, the question is, at what point did that woman, she started dating him, and then did she, you know, Rob Porter was kind of, you know, working himself around the West Wing there, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he wasn't a household name, you know, so it was interesting. You didn't really know him. He was a right-hand man to General Kelly, but he wasn't somebody you really knew. You knew who Hope Hicks was, and then as soon as those pictures emerged on some of those websites of the two of them together, it became hot gossip, I guess, in Washington, and then the ex came forward and reported it.
Now, does Hope Hicks continue to date him?
I haven't heard
of it. Because there'll be all kinds of paparazzi all over both of them now to figure that out.
Yeah.
At what point is Hope Hicks go, I quit. I'm leaving.
Maybe at the part where he's accused of, you know, abusing women.
Well, you mean quit him.
Yeah, maybe that's when she says, oh, yeah, I'm done.
No, I mean the White House.
But didn't you just ask if they were still dating?
Yeah, I did. Because she's the one who wrote the defense of him that was used by the White House. That he's a good guy, that he's, you know, can't believe everything you hear.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Is this the part where we go start our hair on fire?
I'm going to the bathroom right now.
Get me something flammable.
I've got the hairspray. I'll meet you there.
I'm going to put the hairspray, and then I just want you to do that thing where you're spraying it, and then put the big lighter up, and so it's just a flamethrower.
Can't you just get us blow torches at this point? It'd be a lot easier.
I'm
what the welders use.
Elon Musk. He's got like a flamethrower or something he wants to sell on Amazon. All right. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour news?
Then there's this. Early mornings this winter, stay safe, stay connected with Morgan Kochmeyer's weather forecast, Sarah Gindra's traffic reports, weekdays 4 to 6 on WGN-TV Morning News.
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, yes. Right here on 720 WGN. All right.
In the middle of the top 5 at 5.
Yes.
Three to go.
Yes.
Oh gosh.
That's kind of the middle.
Yeah, not close enough to the middle for our bosses. I'll tell you that right now with Judy's news coming your way in 2 minutes. But here we go.
Number 3.
In an interview with Good Morning America, Heisman Trophy winner and NFL bust Johnny Manziel acknowledges, "Oh yeah. By the way, I'm not just a jerk. I have bipolar disorder. A doctor says I do." I don't know if I buy this. He talked with T.J. Holmes about his family and others who were hurt due to his reckless behavior.
You don't understand when people come up to us like, what the hell is your son doing? I didn't really feel that until my mom said that. She just broke down. She was crying. And I saw the trickle down effects of what I was doing in my daily life that were meaningless and pointless and selfish.
He had a domestic violence case, and he went to rehab. And
drugs, alcohol,
tortured, pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, complete flop in the NFL, but he says he wants to get back to football and will be on a field someday again.
Mm-hmm. We saw what happened here in the Super Bowl. You could be off the field and come back and be the MVP of the Super Bowl. He sees himself as that.
It's inspirational.
All right. Checking in at
number two.
25 years ago today, the phrase Groundhog Day embedded itself in our national consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right? Bill Murray, playing a TV weatherman, travels to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, which really was shot right here in Illinois.
Sure was.
Right? Now, it has become one of the most interesting comedies of its era in its existential ways.
I'm a god.
You're a god.
I'm a god. I'm not the god, I don't think.
Because you survived a car wreck? You folks ready to order?
I didn't just survive a wreck. I wasn't just blown up yesterday. I have been stabbed, shot, poisoned, frozen, hung, electrocuted, and burned.
Oh, really?
And every morning I wake up without a scratch on me, not a dent in the fender, I am an immortal.
It's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very well done comedy.
You can watch it again and again. It's one of those.
All right. And finally,
number one.
I just want to say that those kinds of things, when we talk about how old the movies are.
Yeah, makes you feel old.
Yeah,
yeah, me too.
Not very happy about that. All right, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama on hand for the unveiling of their portraits. Here is the former president talking about the artist, Amy Sherald, and Michelle Obama's likeness in the painting that is... This one's getting a lot of criticism because it's kind of an impressionist work.
Amy, I want to thank you for so spectacularly capturing the grace and beauty and intelligence and charm and hotness of the woman that I love.
Hold on, let me practice that. Amy, you're so hot. I wish my wife was as hot as you. She's okay too. Which one is it?
I can only imagine.
Something like that? Here he is talking about having to sit for his own artist, because now this is, and you know, he had one of these. This is a real auteur artist that he sat for, and this is an interesting deal because he sat there for hours and now he's complaining about it.
Kehinde, relative to Amy, was working at a disadvantage because his subject was less becoming, not as fly. I want to say that it was, although those, Michelle always used to joke, I am not somebody who's a great subject. I don't like posing. I get impatient. I look at my watch. I think this must be done. One of those pictures must have worked. Why has this taken so long? So it's pretty torturous trying to just take a picture of me, much less paint a portrait.
Said he tried to negotiate for smaller ears or less gray hair, and he wouldn't do it.
No, Candy Wiley did it. It's a pretty amazing piece. Hey, that's the thing, though. Don't complain about having to sit for a portrait when you're the former president of the United States. It's just a good thing. I'm not sitting, by the way.
Just take a picture.
Just take a picture.
They did it, though.
Yeah.
The results are there for everyone to see.
Yeah, it's going to be. I'm telling you, in 100 years, people are going to look back and think that's one of the more interesting pieces of art of this century. So
it's pretty cool.
All right. Let us now. Let's should we close this thing up? I think we should.
Let's do it.
And we'll move on. And then on the other side, A.B. Stoddard will join us, talk about all the things that are going wrong in Washington today.
The top five at five.
Brokaw Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. Here she is. She spends her Monday afternoons worried about whether or not I'm going to ask a stupid question. Here she is, A.B. Stoddard from, we know her, you love her from Real Clear Politics. You get .com. Everything is a .com. But you can read her work. She's, for many, many, many years, has been on the Washington scene trying to figure this stuff out. And no better time to cover Washington than this very moment right here, is there?
Oh, it's just too much fun, bro.
That's what I thought.
Do you feel like you ever get to rest, AB? I mean, we go crazy when alerts go off on our phone, but you're there in the middle of it all.
No, I have no brain left. You know that. We talk about this all the time. We can't remember what happened 3 days ago. Right. The city union was 2 weeks ago tomorrow.
Oh, gosh.
The brain meld.
2 years ago tomorrow. We've decided that what we're going to do here at the WGN confines is we are going to literally set our hair on fire after every push notification comes into our phones. Because it's like, and we've got to, if you use hairspray and a Bic lighter, you can pretty much do it.
I've done that accidentally before.
Instantaneous.
Yes. So maybe a cigarette and the hairspray and Aquanet.
Works wonders.
We are ready to go.
Boom. New hairdo.
Yep. All right. I don't even know where to begin today. All right. So there's Trump at the White House trying to figure out security clearances. I think the story of the stories here, obviously the intrigue and the personal stories behind Mr. Porter and some of the, he was apparently dating at one point, two different women at the White House. And then, you know, you got the two ex-wives claiming that they were abused by him. Then one of the girlfriends from the White House, the first girlfriend at the White House, she apparently started to experience the same behavior from him, reached out to the White House counsel, Don McGahn, to tell him about this. And that was about the time he started dating Hope Hicks. So there's, you know, that's a big workplace romance drama, you know, abuser kind of thing. But what has been uncovered in all of this, I think is fascinating, is that he was operating. He's a guy who reads all the stuff the president sees as the president's secretary. He did not have an active full-time security clearance. He had a part-time security clearance pending based on the FBI being unable to finish this. The White House says, oh, this is totally normal a year and a couple months into an administration. Mm-hmm. But we're being told that's not totally normal, is it?
No, but it is sort of normal in the Trump West Wing because Jared Kushner has gone more than a year without one. And so how, you know, if they can't kick him out of the circle of classified information, they weren't going to do it with Rob Porter. They make up their own set of rules. And that's been clear from day one. The president has not separated himself from his business. And he and members of his family continue to profit off business deals, sometimes with foreign governments. And that this has just been the way that they've operated. And it is going to become clear, I hope, at some point, you know, who knew what. I tend to believe the FBI presented this information to the top staff and that upon taking over chief of staff last summer, General Kelly probably learned about this. Don McGahn has certainly known about the Rob Porter issue for a while. It sounded today like White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders was trying to say that maybe the FBI had to, you know, check on their processes and clean up their act. But somebody knew, and he was operating on an interim clearance. There was a reason why. Somebody knew the reason why. And then the alarming quote from Mick Mulvaney over the weekend, OMB director, was, oh, the photos took everyone by surprise. Yeah. So if you read it in a folder, you know, it's fine. But if you, you know, restraining orders and stuff, police reports, but if you see the photos and they go out on cable news, that's a problem.
Do you think, AB, this ultimately goes up to General Kelly and anything happens there in terms of, will we hear from him, A, because I don't think we have so far, but B, will this impact his role in the White House in any way?
Yeah, I felt that things became pretty clear yesterday that that somebody decided after the president's tweet on Saturday morning about how men's lives are ruined. He didn't say men, but, you know, accusers. I mean, the accused have their lives ruined by accusers, and they get no recourse, and there's no due process, and their career is over. And I just think that someone rushed in and decided that that was extremely problematic, which is why you saw Kellyanne Conway, counselor to the president, on two shows on Sunday, talking about how much the president has helped women by improving the economy and increasing the number of jobs that women have gotten in the last year, because she knew that the tweet was a serious mistake, especially after Friday's on-camera comments by the president when he didn't talk about the women and only talked about how sad it was for Rob Porter. Mm-hmm. But she also said in a lawyerly way that the president wanted to make the point through her that he still has confidence or faith and is not, quote, actively looking to replace the chief of staff. You know, what we're hearing is he just knows that it's too much drama right now, but it's clear from the fact that people are telling, it looks like General Kelly didn't tell the truth last week.
Well,
and then also there are people reporting that he has lied to them or asked them to lie. So I think that he is going to be replaced, just not right now.
If that's a firing penalty in the White House, asking somebody to lie for you.
No, true. You make a very good point, but
that's it goes on every day. It goes on in all White Houses every day, but in this particular White House, it's like an art form.
It's encouraged.
Yeah.
It's
and
encouraged.
The piece that I think is most interesting about this is you do have both, as you pointed out, you had Kellyanne Conway, and you've also had Sarah Huckabee both going out and saying, I speak for the president here, and he is full feet in favor of helping women through situations like this, and yet he refuses to say it on Twitter because he doesn't want to tick off his base of people who think, you know, that anybody who comes and says anything bad about anything, and he doesn't want to back himself up. I'm surprised. You know, to me, I had the firing of Raj Shah at Saturday at noon on my over-under, and I missed it because I figured they were going to fire the guy who said, oh, yeah, we made mistakes here in the White House. That even came up on the Sunday shows. Hey, is it okay for a guy to say that there was a mistake at the White House? I mean, we're living in such unique times, and let's just hope that we learn something from these unique times. And we survive them, and B, we learn something from them, because we're really at a crossroads here, because you can see two very clear things when you look at the White House, depending on what your political persuasion is, and believe them both equally, right? That is that this is one of the most messed up, corrupt, and like you, the things you just pointed to, conflicted administrations in the history of America, or this guy's getting a lot of stuff done. God bless him. You know, I mean, there's two different ways that people are perceiving this, and you can't overlap on them. It's just amazing, and it's Donald Trump's great skill is to create that level of cognitive dissonance in both his admirers and his detractors.
Yeah, and it really is interesting because, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder, right? What is the definition of the swamp? No visitor logs, no full vetting for security clearances. I mean, this isn't if Hillary Clinton was employing a wife beater who only had an interim security clearance, you know, I don't even know if we would be talking on like a functioning, you know, phone line at this point. It would be the end.
Well, their hair would be on fire. Republicans, you know,
give them the hairspray.
Right.
So it really is an amazing thing, sort of what the definition of, you know, shaking things up is. You don't have to play by the rules. I do think what's interesting about this moment is that the White House seems, though they brush off almost everything, they seem to be very upset, and there's a lot of sort of internal strife over this Rob Porter thing and John Kelly. And I don't know if it was a reason, like you said, so many people have lied without any punishment or consequence. Is this a reason for people like the daughter and son-in-law and other people who were sort of driven crazy by John Kelly and his fierce set of discipline and rules to sort of dump on him? I mean, I can't quite figure it out.
Now, you know what I think is happening? You're overthinking this, AB. Totally overthinking it. The reality here is that it is like Donald Trump loves a chaos-driven thing. He wants to be the center of all the action. I mean, some would say attention, but I think it's action for him. He wants to be the center of action, and chaos is okay because it shakes out, you know, generally in his favor. And that the more chaos he can create, the more he can slide away to go, hey, no, it's not my fault. Or he can create people who are going to be partisan to him, so partisan to him that they'll see him all the way through. He's always had yes people around him. He's got his family and all that. Now, as far as it pertains to John Kelly, he likes the idea that John Kelly's taking some more of the heat. John Kelly will probably have to go. As soon as he becomes more famous or more, you know, becomes draws more light than the president is, that seems to be the thing. They just move along. All right.
You got to set your hair on fire.
I got to go to the bathroom right now with the Aquanet and the Bic.
The Aquanet and the Bic lighter.
Yeah, and the Bic lighter. So I'm going to go do that right now. And we're going to let you go, and we'll talk to you again next Monday, and I'm going to be totally hairless at that point, like Dr. Evil's cat.
Okay. And we're looking for an Instagram pic of that.
Yes, you keep waiting. All right, here we go.
Thanks,
baby.
Amy. Enjoy the week.
All right, here is Judy Pilak telling us what's coming up at the top of the hour. Listen, after 6:40, for your chance to play Blackhawks Pick'em. It's getting hot, actually, because the Blackhawks not so hot, but Blackhawks Pick'em is hot because it's really hard to tell who's going to score.
My gosh, it is.
Yeah.
They have a bit of a scoring drought going on right now with the Blackhawks, top to bottom.
Especially with the veterans, right? We've got some issues with some of them.
Yeah. Not a whole lot of scoring happening for the Blackhawks right now.
Yeah. There's more scoring at a convent. $50 gift certificate to Lou Malnati's, by the way, for the winner of the Blackhawks Pick'em, and I believe it's always the caller, isn't it? Or pretty much always the caller?
They win.
Mm-hmm. All right.
They're undefeated.
All right.
That's the way it should be.
All right. Steve Stone joins us. My old radio regular, I guess we would call it, Steve. I wouldn't exactly
yes,
say
indeed.
Partner, because being like your partners are like big and important, like famous people. Me, you're a guy who has been generous with his time to join this show from time to time. And thank you so much for being with us. And I know you're going to the Worldwide Toast to Harry Carey is coming up on Thursday. We're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. But let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
About
sure.
the White Sox this year.
Mm-hmm.
They've been talking about now this notion that the White Sox are kind of in the same position that the Cubs were in two, three seasons ago. Well, actually more than that now, three, four seasons ago, where you have incredible, incredible prospects. But now you need to really kind of put all the pieces in place and have them really start to gel as a team. Is that what you believe we're seeing here with the White Sox?
Well, first of all, when you and I work together, I like to view that as the golden age of radio. Now, as far as moving forward is concerned, we'll see about that. But as far as the White Sox are concerned, I'm not sure if they're exactly where the Cubs were at any given time because, that's just kind of what happened over there and different personnel and a number of different things. But what the Sox have tried to do, which was similar to what the Cubs did without John Lester, because I think they accelerated their plan when John came and became available because he was the guy they wanted to help take them to the promised land, as it turned out. So they got him, spent a great deal of money when I thought it was going to be one more year of building and then get being in contention.
Right.
As far as what the Sox are doing is they have a lot of very, very talented young players. And the jury will be out until the young players get to the major leagues and either don't live up to expectations or become stars, because a lot of the talented players that the Sox have at this point have the capabilities of being stars. You can see early in a guy's career if he's going to be a part-time player, a swingman, he's going to be the fourth outfielder, or he's going to be a starter. And then if you see a starter in his future, then it's the rare guy who you can see stardom. They've got a lot of guys with the potential to not only be good major leaguers, but to be major league stars. And, you know, if you can tell me which guys are going to take that step, I'll tell you how quickly this is.
All right, I'm going to run down a list for you, Steve. Hold on 1 second. Well, it does seem there is some optimism. There's reason for optimism on the South.
Oh, absolutely. Very much so.
And I do like it. It's fun to watch young guys come up and develop and start to gel. And there is nothing more exciting than when they stun, a great team that comes in. in a, you know, like a Houston or whatever it's going to be, and all of a sudden they sweep them in a series. Like, what the who are these guys? Right? You've seen that happen in development when teams are in these development phases. And mm-hmm. I'm a North Sider. I'm a Cubs fan, but I'm excited about this on the South Side because it's fun to have, you know, we have real baseball in this town for the first time in a long time, you mm-hmm. know, where you've got, you know, great storylines on both sides of town. And now you, Darvish, with the Cubs, let's just talk about that for a second. I think, you know, this was something that, you know, remember they were in the sweepstakes for him when he was a rental free agent. But to get him now, I mean, this does change this. I think, you know, this changes the line on the Cubs being able to get back into the World Series, does it not?
Well, it certainly gives them a quality major league pitcher. And with the exception of the postseason last year when he fell apart, I would say that the rest of the specs are awfully good. Darvish has great stuff, and he's going to be benefited playing in Chicago all year long instead of playing in Texas, where, you know, he signed. And it's not easy to pitch in Arlington because it's hot. Really hot, and you know, it's difficult day in and day out to keep everything together over the course of a long season if you're a Texas Rangers pitcher. I also believe that he's going to be benefited, and I know he had some time with Los Angeles and had some good moments, but again, at the end of the year, it wasn't great for him. Mm-hmm. I think probably he was just tired, but he's a good pitcher, and I think, yes, it greatly enhances their chances. I mean, I look at the starting rotation. They're even talking about acquiring another starting pitcher because they realize if there is one weakness at all, and you exclude the bullpen, hoping that, you know, that Morrow is going to be able to close, despite the fact that he's only been a closer at times in his career. Yeah. He certainly has a stuff for it. If you assume that he's going to close, then the bullpen probably doesn't have as many holes as one would think when losing Wade Davis. But that being said, I think the Cubs feel that the starting rotation is something they have to shore up. I think they felt they could do it. I think they're pretty happy with their starting lineup. And obviously, they have a lot of guys there that remember how to win the big prize. So that's not a factor. On the other side of town, on the White Sox side of town, their young guys have not won as a group yet. And it takes a while to do that. Don't forget that almost without exception, look at Kansas City. They came a game away from winning the World Series, and next year they won it. Look at the Cubs. It looked like they had a really good shot the year before, but the next year they won it after the experience of going through it. Yeah. The White Sox as a team have not gone through it yet. They're going to have a decent enough year this year. I'm thinking, you know, plus or minus six games either side of 500. But next year is a year when I think a lot of people believe if a couple of these guys start to take the next step, the Sox are going to be very competitive and on the way, at least, to what the Cubs seemingly have accomplished, which is sustained competitiveness. Yeah. Every year, you look at that team and you say, there's a chance this year. There were many years when you looked at the Cubs team and the White Sox team, yeah, certainly, and you say, okay, well, there's no chance. And,
there's right, always hope, but no chance.
Yeah, right, hope, right. Hope is not a strategy, by the way.
No.
Hey, Steve, before the signing of Darvish, there was a major standoff, and still is, between front offices and player agents. There's almost 100 free agents still on the market right now, and pitchers and catchers are reporting this week. Many are crediting the fact that basically half the league is in rebuild mode and nobody's spending right now. The agents are blaming and pointing the finger at the ownerships and general managers and things like that. I guess, what are your overall thoughts on this unprecedented amount of free agents that remain on the market and this standoff that we've seen all offseason?
Well, first of all, what you're seeing, I mean, you're seeing from all around baseball, let's take this particular offseason and take it, you know, let's set it aside for a second and take a look all around baseball, and you'll see the salaries for the star players are astronomical. And, you know, I don't begrudge the players anything. I mean, I would have been a history teacher. It turns out I was a player, and I was very happy with what I made, although when you look ahead, you know, everybody says, well, what could you have made now? Well, it's not relevant. Go by. I could make very little as a 70-year-old pitcher. But my feeling is, I'll ask the three of you, would you go in and, you know, go into an ice cream store and see two scoops of ice cream for $5, but in the right corner you see two scoops of ice cream for $30, and it was the same ice cream? Would you pay $5 or $30? You obviously would pay $5.
I pay $30. That's just
that's
me,
though. That's kind of how you operate,
that's
isn't
I roll.
It? Like, I want the better so, ones, and they're more credit. Expensive.
That must be good. Yeah, but I mean, but your point is well taken. That,
yeah,
that,
I get it.
And that's it. Players are asking for a great deal of money across the board. And in the case of Scott Boras, he tries to get the ultimate dollar each and every contract. And that's, you know, that has been his style from the beginning, and owners and general managers and presidents know going in that's what he is going to do. And I think because owners have spent a great deal of money in the past, it does not obligate them to spend a great deal of money now. So a lot of guys are saying, you know what, rather than 100 and some odd million, whatever it is, I'll sit back and I'll wait, because eventually these guys who are players will want to play. And when they want to play, we will give them a good salary. It just won't be, you know, an outrageous salary. And I think that's maybe some sort of fiscal sanity is coming back. But just about the time you say that, then
yeah, you Darvish
signs for $300 million.
Yeah, I mean, you get
well, that was 126, though.
So. Yeah, that right. It was 126.
Peanuts.
But you stop me. It's 126, and then you think about all of the other conditions that came along with them.
Right.
I mean, it is we're getting a deal. Yeah, I just imagine the Ricketts here. Look, we got a deal, $126 million for a starter who has got a little injury problem.
Well, this time last year, Jake Arrieta was probably had hopes of getting a Max Scherzer type deal, which was around $200 million, and that's not going to happen this offseason. It's just a different market.
It is. Yeah.
Well,
it is a different market. And, you know, look, the agents and a couple times they had a point when they talked about collusion. I don't think there's an industry-wide collusion at this point. I think the owners are just having some semblance of sanity and saying, you know what, maybe I'll pay for Bryce Harper, but I'm not going to pay $300 million for Bryce Harper light. That's right. Just kind of, you know, where I am as an organization.
Yeah.
And I think more organizations are saying that. That doesn't mean that the top players won't get paid, because they're always going to get paid. It's just the guys that step down wanting more money and the owners are willing to give them. And eventually, unless they want to start their own league, they're going to sign.
Look at Jake Arrieta and how much respect he deserves from this team and certainly Cubs fans. And did I miss something, or has he already – what's happening with Jake Arrieta now? Where does his – situation?
Well, I think you'd have to ask Jake Arrieta or his agent.
Still a free agent.
I have no idea what's happening to him.
Yeah.
What's that?
I just said still a free agent. Still looking for a home right now.
You know, so I don't know what's going to happen to him. Eventually, if he can't find a home, he will find one, and it'll be a lot less than he wanted. But there won't be any tag days for Jake Arrieta. He's made a great deal of money in the game, and he'll be just fine. And wherever he goes, he's going to be an asset to that team. And the only problem the Cubs have now is that besides with Milwaukee.
right. True. Well, that is an interesting situation. All right, let's just reminding everybody now. I know you're not going to be able to make it because you have duties, Steve Stone. You have important things that you must do with the White Sox, as you know, pitchers and catchers are reporting our
pitchers
own.
Pitchers and catchers Wednesday.
And
pitchers and catchers on Wednesday.
Our own Kevin Powell is traveling to the Valley of the Sun tonight to be able to be there tomorrow, and he will be at the White Sox Park on Wednesday for this, which is, by the way, everybody is raving about what an amazing facility that is as well.
So, Camelback's pretty great.
Yeah, it's a pretty...
There's a lot of fields, and the Dodgers and the Sox are very happy that they can work out their major leaguers and minor leaguers in the same facility, and you know, you have everything there. It's a world-class facility, and you know, both teams are very happy to be there.
Yeah, it's fun to see the Dodgers and the Sox together. It just reminds you of 1959 all over again.
1959.
Yeah, that's what it does.
Bad ending. Good beginning, bad ending.
Oh, gee.
That's how that goes. All right. Very quickly, the worldwide toast to Harry Carey is on Thursday here at, and I know you've been there a number of times at the beautiful Harry Carey's on Kinsey.
Mm-hmm.
And I will just ask you this, in terms of Harry's, Grant DePorter, are you familiar with him? You ever heard of him before?
Let me see. We had, actually, he is responsible, well, he's not responsible, I'm responsible. I was late to a brunch that I had with the DePorters, Grant and his lovely wife, and it was great. We talked about a lot of things. One of the things we talked about was the toast, and yes, I know Grant very well.
Yes.
He is a wonderful restaurateur and a very nice man.
And the P.T. Barnum of Chicago, essentially, right?
I tell you what, between, and they do it in different capacities, but John McDonough, Brooks Boyer, and Grant DePorter, Mm-hmm. As far as guys who can sell things, guys who can create marketing and creative aspects to make their product appeal to more people. Mm-hmm. Those three are masters.
Yes,
Grant, geniuses.
Wonderful at it.
Yeah.
The other guys are associated with professional baseball teams. One now associated with a professional hockey team. But you know, great things happened for the Hawks when John McDonough got there. Mm-hmm. Great things have happened for Harry Caray's, the whole restaurant chain, because Grant is as creative as he is. He's done some amazing things, and you know, the toast to Harry is one of them, and blowing up the baseball, and a number of things where, you know, Grant's mind works a lot different than most people.
That's true.
And does a great job of it.
I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but yeah, I know you've ever gotten a phone call from Grant Deporter at 3 o'clock in the morning. Hey, I just came up with something. And then you're like, oh, God, really? Do you have to?
108. Right,
108. Right.
He's like
the key to figuring out hieroglyphics.
Right.
Who knew?
I look at the square roots of the various numbers.
I know.
Yeah.
Until you believed it. And then you're like, wait a minute. He's right.
I have actually put the phone down next to me on the pillow and just let him go. And then I come back an hour later. I go, uh-huh. And then I put it down and just keep going. So it goes. I'm sorry you're going to miss this because I know it's a date on the calendar that's tough for you, but it is a ton of fun. All right. Thank you. So,
you know what? I look back, and it seems like just yesterday when the single greatest salesman in the history of baseball left us. And, you know, Grant's done a great job of keeping everything, the whole realm and the whole world that was Harry Caray alive to this day. So it's kind of nice.
It's really true. 20 years, man. I mean, that's when you stop and you think about it. It's really incredible. It's the greatest funeral in the history of funerals, by the way. I just want to say, you know, I always think about...
Stephen Akin had the greatest speech in the history of funeral speeches.
In the history of death. And there's a great history of death on this planet. And Pete Van Akin did knocked it out of the park, literally.
Uh-huh.
It was the greatest thing of all times. All right, Steve, thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
We'll raise a cold Budweiser for you.
Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you, you too.
Remember, it's going to be 42 on Thursday.
Thank you. It's going to be 80 where you are. Goodbye. Get out.
Oh, bye. Kevin, don't take your lead from him. And rub that in while you're down there.
I won't.
People don't like that.
All right, dude. Right, Martier?
Yes, sir.
What's coming up at the bottom of the hour here? Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, this guy wants to be congressman, and I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
Benjamin Thomas Wolfe is going to run for the 5th district as a Democrat here, and I have to just ask you this, Benjamin Thomas Wolfe.
Yes, sir.
What the hell do you want this job for? You were in the FBI.
You were
in the Department of State.
He's a PhD.
You're a PhD.
For God's sakes.
You have been all over the world. You have served your country well and ably, and I have no idea why you'd want to go to Washington.
Have you seen Washington? Are you watching?
I am watching. That's why I need to be there.
All right. So, well, let me ask you this, because you were in the FBI. What is your thought on the way that the intelligence services, and specifically the FBI, is being treated currently?
Excellent question. Firstly, thanks for having me. This is exciting for us. You know, I served faithfully in the FBI for 5 years, and I have to admit, they are some of the most selfless, sacrificial people. You know, just... the minute you step in the door at the FBI building, your life is in danger. The minute you are hired. And to watch an institution be torn down, you know, when I was one of the people to help build it, is disheartening. It's frustrating. And I think a lot of Americans are having real issues with this.
I hope so. I hope they are. Because my experience with the FBI has been...
I hope you've had no experience with the FBI.
Well, but we have because of, you know, in our business, we interact with them in the coverage of stories. I've had other experiences with the FBI. I've been with Robert Mueller specifically.
But you went to the training academy too,
right?
The Citizens Academy.
And Robert Mueller gave me an award for something unrelated to all of that. And it's so I have had That's the biggest name drop I've ever had.
That's
way.
A big one.
But
just ringing a bell.
The FBI director.
Yes, right. When he was FBI director, yeah. Now he's just a bad guy trying to take down. Donald Trump,
he was
right?
My director, and he's incredibly well known. He's strong and mature and well spoken. He had incredible amounts of respect from the cadre and the ranks.
Yeah, well, see, this is the thing that gets me about this is that you've got a guy here in Robert Mueller who was appointed by Republicans and Democrats. I mean, a guy that is respected. Knows where the bodies are buried, literally has been the longest serving, post, the whole J. Edgar Hoover thing, the longest serving FBI director. And now these guys are political footballs. And the men and women of the FBI who go out, like you said, ably every day, honestly, with integrity every day to try to go take bad guys off the street. Mm-hmm. And to keep the country safe, to be now accused of being political pawns.
Oh, it's frustrating for them. They call me. They know I'm running for office, so they call me to vent from time to time. And they all say, Benjamin, all we want to do is do our job quietly and professionally. Mm-hmm. And that is what the FBI throughout history has always done. And now to be dragged into the political spotlight, into the news, these seeds of doubt are being thrown around, and it's harmful to not just the FBI but all of the American institutions.
Right.
These policies and politics change. These institutions are forever.
But you're not running against President Trump. You're running against mm-hmm. Mike Quigley. And so I'm sure he has similar thoughts about protection of the FBI, but you guys have much difference enough that you say, hey, I need mm-hmm. to be in this race.
Yeah, I've had actual experience in these agencies. Like I said, FBI 5 years. I was a U.S. diplomat 10 years. I served in Iraq multiple times. I've been deployed overseas. I raised my children in Africa. I think it's time for the people of Chicago in the 5th District to have representation that has knowledge of these agencies and the ideas and the policies that have actually served and sacrificed. I think we deserve better at this point on all levels, mm-hmm. truly. The district that I'm running for is the 5th District, and it's it for the people that don't know.
Is this your first political office you ever run for?
It is, indeed.
How you like it when you get into like the Illinois system and you have to mm-hmm. meet the ward committeemen and people who are the sort of the nuts and bolts operators here of politics in the state of Illinois? How you liking that, Benjamin?
That sounds like a loaded question,
but yeah, it is.
I'm going to answer that for you. I have had mostly good interactions with them for the most part. I'll be honest.
Because you're a guy nobody sent.
I'm
right?
circumventing them. I'm going directly to the people and the voters. The days of these old, backdoor meetings, as Chris Kennedy, who's running for governor, said, those are over. If people vote for us, if people believe in what we're doing, we win. The days of the alderman controlling things, it's not going to happen like that anymore. People have more information. They're more aware. They're mobile. They can do as they please. And people are finally getting more options, which we really like. This district Mike hasn't been opposed in almost 10 years. I am the first person to stand up and oppose a sitting congressman in this district. And I'm proud of that. I think right now we need stronger leaders. I don't want to be an ageist, but we need younger leaders. We need people that represent Chicago in the 5th District, which the average age is 33 years old. We need young, progressive leadership.
So how old are you?
My background. I'm 42. I'm okay. too old for the job.
How about the funding? How's that going for you? Because that's a big piece of a congressional district race, for sure. And how's it going?
It's good. It's slow. We are not taking money from corporations, which I like to think sets us apart. We're taking a lot of smaller donations, very grassroots. And again, a campaign doesn't require that much money if you're talking to people the right way, if you're leading groups of people, if you can convince people to follow you and you can get campaign volunteers. There are obvious needs for resources like flyers and, posters and such, but it's minimal. And we're running a very smart and efficient campaign with technology and with people power, and it's working. A lot of people have heard about our campaign.
Now, let's talk about Washington here. Chicago. I mean, there is some truth. I do appreciate what you're saying here about the digitalization of mm-hmm. of the world, and people are more autonomous, and they have more power in their hand literally than they ever had before, and communication style mm-hmm. and all that. But now you get to Washington, and let's say you win the primary, you win the general election. Now you're caught in that world of being one of 435 mm-hmm. in the House of Representatives and in the Democratic caucus. And where do you see that you could make a difference here?
Great question. I have served two presidents, four secretaries of state. I have served under multiple administrations, and I think it's important to understand
both
sides.
In the FBI and State Department.
Yeah, so I've served both Republican and Democrat, and it's important to understand both sides. The really important thing is winning this primary means you essentially win the election. This is an all Democrat, you know, 75 to 80% Democratic district. Mm-hmm. To get to Washington, not having taken money from corporations, running on a pro-cannabis stance, running on a union stance, running on universal health care, I have the ability then to really lead people from our party to the left, to be one of the next generation of Democrats in the House, to start leading people towards these progressive ideas, pulling with me all of these Republicans. They will not negotiate clearly with the House and the Senate and the presidency. They're not negotiating. They're pulling us further their way. We've got to start fighting back.
The cannabis, we were just talking to the county commissioner, John Fritchie, mm-hmm. who is coming out being, the first, like, actively acknowledging cannabis user. He's got a cannabis card. He's got the, you know, legal user of marijuana.
He's still behind me. We had a smokeout, a public 420 smokeout in Logan Square last year.
What is going on here?
The FBI guy is doing this too?
The FBI guy is doing this now. No, listen. I like Fritchie. I like what they're doing. It's important to legalize it here. As a former federal agent, uh-huh. I am incredibly pro-cannabis. I am a user recreationally. I think it's medicine for people. People deserve to have this. It brings billions of dollars to this state. It changes the criminal justice system. It may be one of the biggest policies we have right now, and most people respond to it well. You'd be surprised. 85% plus want it.
Well, obviously, this is 2018 is the year of it in terms of it being a political wedge issue.
Definitely.
Right? In terms of using it as a piece of identity politics. If people, it's a kind of, we now live because of this age of social media and all the rest and all the power in your hand, that people identify themselves in tribal ways, and one of the tribes is the pot tribe, yeah. essentially, and this is kind of where it is, and so
the cannabis caucus,
yeah, well,
and we've been called the cannabis candidate. It's real. It like I said, it is one of the biggest platforms out there right now.
So who's on your card here for governor? Have you announced who you?
Again, that's really putting me on the spot. We have not. As a campaign, we talk about it all the time. We really like
chosen one yet. You like Dan Biss's cannabis thing? Because I like that. I think it's very creative.
I would love to see Kennedy come out strong. I think it's important that he has a fair shot and gets enough press. I don't think Dan Biss can really pull the weight of governorship. I think Pritzker has seen his day. I think Kennedy could come out swinging and do well. Yeah, yeah. We're actually going to go see him, both Chris and Joe, here sometime next week. We're going to meet with them. Right. We have high hopes mm-hmm. for Joe as well. We need someone that can take this president on in 2020. It's time to start looking ahead.
Oh, you think? Kennedy. Joe Kennedy, you think, is going to run for president in 2020? Is it you? Are you pushing?
Sure if he's ready to run yet, but it's time to start shaping people that can actually take on this president. He may. I mean, he could be there another 4 years.
Do you think he could be Speaker of the House?
Joe?
Yeah.
Possibly. It's time to start wrestling power from Pelosi and some of those folks up there. It's like I said, it's
interesting.
Time.
There, we think we just made some news. Martyr, I hope you're rolling tape.
Are
on
you
this.
Listening, Martyr?
Got it. Got my ears on.
Okay, good. That's very interesting stuff. All right, Benjamin Thomas Wolfe. Interesting, very interesting. Thank you for doing this. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, thanks for coming by and talking with us.
And now I go from the sublime to the insane. Okay. You want to play Blackhawks Pick'em? 19th caller, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, your chance to rip us off for a $50 gift certificate to Lou Malnati's, loumalnati's.com. Martyr, what's coming up at the top of the hour?